Terry Savage joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. The nationally syndicated financial columnist and author, visit terrysavage.com. Terry, I thought your list on, I saw your article in the paper on, I think it was Sunday. You mentioned it on the radio before that, of good Christmas gift ideas, financially speaking. It was really helpful, really interesting.
Well, thank you. I posted the latest one. I had a column on gifts for children, and now I have a grown-up money gifts column posted at terrysavage.com, so you'll get a sneak peek at that.
We'll talk about that in a minute. Let's start talking about the stock markets. What's going on here?
Okay, isn't this interesting? The stock market is always right. That's, you have to start from that premise. Whatever the price is the price, and you can buy or sell at that price. The people are a little confused. Let's go back. Go back to last Friday, that huge market decline. The word of the new variant, which hadn't even gotten the Omicron name yet, really said, oh my gosh, the world's going to shut down. There won't be any more cruises. There won't be any more gasoline. Oil prices plummeted. Stock market plummeted. And over that was a kind of a quiet day. Remember, it was a half day trading. And the pros were all out eating, you know, getting ready for their turkey. But then Monday, everybody said, well, maybe that was a little bit of an overreach. We'll have a rally. Then Tuesday came. And here's what happened. Two different things. First, the chairman of Pfizer and Moderna said, hey, you know what? We're going to be on top of this, but this new variant, Omicron, might not be prevented by the vaccines that we have out there. Everybody, oh, no, that's horrible. And then the most interesting thing happened. The Fed chairman came out, and we've talked about this before, you know, the word transitory. He said, forget the word transitory. We now believe inflation is here. I wonder if that had something to do with the fact that he could speak freely after being renominated, but nobody else has raised that question, so far be it from me. But at any rate, the Fed chairman said, we're going to accelerate our taper. What does that mean? They've been pumping $180 billion into the economy every month, new money. We're going to taper that off much more quickly than we thought. And the market said, gee, after they finish that, will they raise rates if they're now worried about inflation? So that hit the market. And then today, everybody said, we can't figure this out. Is the economy really strong? That's why the Fed's willing to act? Or is it going to be really weak? We haven't seen, I don't think yet, a confirmed case of the Omicron variant in the U.S. And so the market rebounded. It was up over 400 points shortly after the opening. It's up, as you just heard, about 135 points now. And the answer is, you're a long-term investor. This is the kind of stuff you find interesting but ignore. If you're a trader, you're not listening to me. Go talk to Cramer. And nobody knows really whether this economy is going to be hit hard by another round, even some kind of a slowdown. The best thing to watch is not the stock market, but the price of oil, which has bounced up and down, because that's a direct correlation to how much growth is in the economy. And that's just pure speculation on whether this doesn't matter at all. We have a strong economy. The Fed's confident enough to stop putting money in. And right now, the overriding thing is, so I'll conclude with this, there's a ton of money floating around. Yes, I know it's a sure loser to put it in a bank at 0.25% when inflation is 6%. Some people need that liquidity anyway. That will resolve itself. But in the meantime, money has no place to go except the stock market. And that's kind of where it's been going.
Does the what does the price of oil tell you right now?
Well, the price of oil has to do with how much will there be plane rides? You know, will there be trucking? Will there be travel? So, you know, it's been up. It's been, don't forget, a year ago. Well, it's a year and a half ago now. Energy oil prices went negative, and then they were up over $85 a barrel. And I'm going to try and get you a quick quote.
Yeah, but whatever the number is that you find, I'm wondering, so whatever that is, does the price of oil tell us right now that the economy is strong, that there will be a demand because
oil has backed off. There are some people who decided that there's a headline that I love this morning. It's from one brokerage firm trying to make headlines, get noticed. Oil may hit $150 if the world's deep reliance on fossil fuels, if the economies recover. Okay, so there's those who think it could be worth a lot more, and oil prices dropped from over $85 a barrel, and right now trading around, let me just see, $71 a barrel. So, or $68 a barrel for U.S. crude. So these are trading markets. These are not investing markets. That's a big difference. I think I know who you are out there listening. And you're not looking for tips on where oil will go in the next 6 weeks or whether the bulls or the bears will win out, the bulls being those on the price of oil who think the economy will remain strong, will be traveling, and so forth. The bears think, oh, my gosh, things are going to slow down. Inevitably, this Omicron thing is going to be horrible. That's what those traders are doing, not so much down on the floors anymore, but in front of their screens. That's not what I hope our radio audience is doing.
No, I don't think they're doing that, but I think they are interested in what those people whose job it is to forecast that are saying.
Wait 1 second. There's a well, I'm going to make just one quick point.
Okay.
There's a big difference between forecasting, between writing a research report and saying, you know what? I think the world's going to be just fine and oil's going to be 150, or I think the world's coming to an end. We're going to slow down. It'll be back down to the 50s or 40s or lower than that. There's a big difference between forecasting, which is hot air, and trading, which means you put your money up. You put your money where your mouth is. And those are the people you want to watch. And how do you watch them? You see what the price is, and you see if the bulls are more aggressive than the bears or vice versa.
But we got to take a break here. But the question is, so does $68 a barrel is that an optimistic view? Is that a good harbinger for the economy? That's kind of in the middle.
Well, I look at it now in perspective. It's kind of saying, mediocre kind of economy.
That's kind of what I thought. Okay, let's pause here. It's 12:16, Ogden, but at least you know where the baseline is today, if you will. Terry, anything else you want to say before we take some calls?
No, we'll just keep watching the markets again. This is not headline making time. This headline is not panic making time, but it's a really good time. We're coming near the end of the year. It's a perfect time. You know, the market is still fairly close to its all-time highs. And if you feel like you would be uncomfortable, if there were, and there's bound to be inevitably maybe a 10 or 15% decline, if you're not going to be able to ride that out, this is a good time to sit down. You've got your October 31st statement. We're probably back about where we were then, the quarter. So, or end of September anyway. So take a look at your accounts and make sure that if something bad happened, you are not going to panic and sell when the market goes down.
Let's talk to Tyrone. You're on WGN Radio. Tyrone, how can we help you?
Well, I've only talked to Terry one time before. I'm calling for my ma. She wants to know why is it that you're supposed to get all excited and wound up about a Social Security raise. And every time you get a Social Security raise, Medicare raises their premiums and landlords raise the rent. Why is that?
In one word, it's called inflation, or maybe in two or three words, it's called because they can. We said that here, Tyrone. I know you're a regular listener, and I hope your mom is too. And when they came out about a month or two ago saying, hey, Social Security will be up 6%, largest increase since 1980s, I said at the time, wait, don't spend that yet. Medicare premiums will go up. Because we have general increase in consumer prices, the consumer price index up 6% year over year, you're seeing landlords have the freedom to raise the rent. And chasing higher incomes, pushing costs up, pushing prices up is that vicious, what we call wage price spiral. Only your mom doesn't get a chance to really work more and earn more at higher wages. So it's tough for seniors.
Tyrone, good luck. Good question. Good answer. This is Tom. You're on WGN. Hi, Tom.
Hi, John. Hi, Terry. Hey, Terry, question. Unfortunately, I have to buy a new car, so I'm in the process of buying it, and I'm wondering what the best way to pay for this expensive thing. I got 1.9% interest. Should I just borrow all the money from them or use some of my chicken money?
Well, because you're not earning 1.9% in the bank. There's a side piece to this, which I want to confess I don't understand, but I have a smart, very smart son who's in finance, and he is also a car guy. And he always says they build so much into the financing, so many other little fees that add to that temptingly low financing rate, that you are always better making a deal for cash. I mean, that's in general. And I'm not the car buying expert. I always turn to him for those things. But he's always said that to me. You know, you walk in there and make a deal and be ready to walk out. If it's $62,900, and you say, look, I've got cash. I'll give you $62,000 flat. Whatever it is, you make your best deal for cash. Then if you want to finance it, well, you know there's some hidden fees in there, but make your deal first for cash.
You're looking at a new or a used vehicle, Tom?
No, it's going to be a new one.
Wow. You found one, huh?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, no, it's on a ship coming here, but, you know, it's like, yeah. Well, you know, the used ones are just as expensive as the new ones.
So I know.
So I'm not happy about it at all, but what are you going to do?
Absolutely true. Well, you know, they say the dealers are in the driver's seat because they have so few cars on hand that they can demand higher prices. But the dealers are pretty smart, too. They know this roadblock on the West Coast ports is going to break. And eventually there will be a flood of cars making their way to the dealers. The chip shortage will end. So, A, if you can wait a little bit, you might get a better deal. But even so, I think there are a lot of dealers who would rather have your deposit money and a sure thing when the car does come through. So you're not in as poor a bargaining position as you might think.
And the one thing they do like is they don't have to carry the inventory. Those vehicles on the lot, those dealers essentially paid for now, and maybe it'll never be 300 new cars on the lot. Maybe you're going to be ordering them like you do clothes, and you're going to buy from a very limited new inventory. I don't know that that's the case, but I know they are enjoying the fact that they do not have to carry that much inventory right now. Let's talk to Jane. You're on WGN. Hey, Jane, you're on the air.
Hi, Terry and John. Terry, I've heard you talk about long-term health care insurance before, and is there an ideal age that you recommend buying that?
Yeah, you know, this is an interesting question because in the olden days of about 6 or 7 years ago, the time to buy long-term care insurance was in your early 60s and healthy because then you got a low premium. And the idea was that it would stay the same low premium forever. Then the insurance companies realized they were, number one, people were using these policies. They weren't worried about going to a nursing home. They said, oh, yeah, great, I'll go to assisted living. This will pay. That's nice. And because they weren't earning very much on their investment portfolios for a long time, so they started telling the states, we got to raise premiums or we're going to go out of business. And so people who thought they'd locked in nice low premiums in their, you know, in their 60s found huge increases, and there was nothing we could do about it. Now you buy a combo policy, a combination of life and long-term care. You put a hunk of money in it, like maybe $100,000 deposit, maybe 10 years of $10,000 deposits, but the premiums will never go up when you're older and don't have money to pay it. And if you don't use this policy for care, your beneficiaries will get a nice life insurance, death benefit from the other part of it. So I would say in your 60s, while you're healthy enough to qualify, is the time to buy a combo long-term care insurance policy. And you can go to terrysavage.com and see my suggested places to buy it. You want to use an agent that not only is very knowledgeable now in selling it, but will be there with you when it comes time to make claims on it.
Good luck, Jane. I'm glad you asked that question. Terry, respond to this when we come back after a quick break for news. I asked somebody about that recently, a financial advisor. He said that if you are going to retire, or if you're going to have less than $1 million in assets, then you probably can't afford that long-term care insurance. And if you anticipate having more than $3 million when you need that kind of care, you actually won't need it. You'll have your $3 million. It's people who have between $1 and $3 million, or expect that you'll have between $1 and $3 million when you need that kind of care, that should have long-term care insurance. Tell us after the news if you think those numbers are right. After Terry answers the question we left her with before the break, which is, Terry, somebody told me that in terms of long-term care, if you have less than $1 million, you probably can't afford that insurance. If you'll have over $3 million when you need long-term care, you can self-fund. It's the people between $1 and $3 million of anticipated assets that really need that. Is that a fair metric?
Let me answer from both ends. Okay, let me start at the upper end. You have over $3 million. That includes, by the way, your wonderful house, which you bought many years ago for $289,000. That's now worth $1.2 million. Hey, but you're so wealthy. The rest of it's in stocks in your eye. Why would you waste a few $4,000 or $5,000 a year paying Allstate or State Farm insurance premiums? Why on earth would you do that? You can afford to build it back. Don't buy insurance. That is the same, and by the way, the chances are 10 times greater when you're over 65 that you'll need some form of help in the form of custodial care, which we know Medicare doesn't pay for. Now, if you have over $3 million, it means you made some smart decisions in your life or you were very lucky. It probably means you either have family or you have good causes that you'd rather send that money to than to the nursing home operators. So just like you hedge risk in your home, if you're smart and you've accumulated that much money, you hedge the risk by buying long-term care insurance, which if you don't use, your heirs get a death benefit. The wealthier you are, the more important it is not to be wasting your money on long-term care when the odds are that you'll need some form of it and the government doesn't pay. Now, at the lower income level, I'm going to offend some people. You're going to get calls. Has anybody ever visited someone in a Medicaid-funded nursing home before COVID? How about now? This is just me. I respect the people that work there. I mean, they do incredible work. They're underpaid, and that doesn't look like they're going to get paid more. Now they're understaffed because people are afraid to work there. And is that where you want to spend the last 90, 100, 3 days of your life, the last 6 months of your life? Because Medicare doesn't pay for custodial care when you can't walk or dress yourself or go to the bathroom or shower or whatever. That's why you have a long-term care insurance policy. That's why you buy the premiums, because you've made that decision. That's not where you want to spend your last 3 to 6 months.
Let's pick up some phone calls. Here we go. Bob is next. You're on WGN. Hey, Bob, you're on the air.
Hey, John. Hey, Terry. Thanks. I appreciate insights that both of you have to share. I recently filled out a FAFSA form for college aid for my children, and I think I mistakenly included our 457 plan asset. They asked for all the salary and your other assets, investments. I think I made a mistake by including that 457 retirement plan. Is that true?
Because I haven't filled out a FAFSA, which I did a few years ago just to suffer the pain that I helped a family do it. And I went, oh gosh, this is really tough. But I believe that you will find that retirement assets are classified separately on the FAFSA. So you can go back and revise that FAFSA anytime you want. And I would suggest you do so.
Much appreciated.
Okay, good luck to you, Bob. I appreciate your call. Lots of phone calls today, so let's go to Darlene next. You're on WGN. Hi, Darlene.
Good morning. I have a problem. In 2017, my husband passed away. I received his Social Security of $1,740 a month. In 2019, I decided to sell our condo in Florida, which I got $200,000. Well, the government said I now was making $250,000 a year, so they took my husband's Social Security away and now are sending me only $1,400 a month, and I make $50,000 a year.
Okay. Let me just say this. It's something called IRMLA. It's the income related adjustment to Medicare. Are you talking about your Medicare premiums or your Social Security itself?
Well, the Social Security was $1,740, and then in 2019,
how old is your husband?
Wait, he passed away.
He was 81. Pardon me?
Okay. So you are getting his Social Security benefits now?
Yes. I'm 82.
Okay, you need to contact Social Security and find out, and it's not so easy to do these days, okay? You need to contact Social Security and find out why they adjusted your benefits. Were you originally getting benefits on your own account? I missed the first part of your question. No,
well,
you've always been getting them.
I was getting $740 a month. And then when my husband passed away, I got his $1,740, but then when I sold the condo in 2019 and I made $200,000.
No, which the Social Security, once you're over full retirement age, your income has no impact on your Social Security benefits. It can on the premium payments you pay for Medicare Part B. So
well,
you need to. So probably your premium payments went up for Medicare Part B because they looked at that gain as income. And someone who was a good financial advisor might have told you, are you sure you want to do this? Maybe you want to lease it out or something like that, because it will have an impact on rising Medicare premiums, which are deducted from your Social Security check. But you can call Social Security and find, and that typically only lasts for a couple of years, except they looked back to 2018, not 2019 in some weird way when they adjusted last year. And it's a little bit confusing about what years they're going to use to look back on when they make this year's adjustment. That's been a subject of much discussion on financial planning boards. Social Security skipped a year in looking back. Mm-hmm. Medicare, I said. Should say, skipped a year looking back on earnings because of COVID.
Darlene, I hope that helps. Reach out to Social Security. We're going to go to Paul next.
Wait, before you do that, I want to correct something.
Okay.
Something bothered me, and I always, you know what, I get lots of, I don't know everything, but I also know, but I do know where to look for everything, and I get lots of questions on my blog where I'll say, this is the answer, but I'll go, I want to double check it. I wanted to go back to the FAFSA question that Bob had.
Yep.
Because I was a little unsure of that. I said they're reported separately, but retirement savings are not reported on the FAFSA form. I just wasn't sure about that, so I went and looked it up. So if you have a 401k, 403b, a pension, annuities, those are not reported on the FAFSA. So if he did put that on the FAFSA, my advice stands, he should definitely go back and adjust that FAFSA form.
I didn't know that
family
that
farms
easy to
and
do.
Homes and businesses are also exempt from FAFSA. But I just wasn't sure about whether it was a separate place or not at all. It's not at all your 401k.
Got it. Okay. Maybe time for one more call. And that will be Eileen. You're on WGN. Eileen, how can we help you?
Hi, John. Hi, Terry. Terry, I have your book literally on my coffee table as you speak. Great show today, by the way. I have a quick question for you. The gentleman that you had on not too long ago on the program with you and John, he said the end of the year was going to be 40,000. Are we still on pace for that?
And okay. So, question. All right. You're talking about Dr. Bob Fralick, who at last year's Executive Club Economic Forecast said, you'll remember, he's been very bullish and very correct for 5 years. And last year, coming on a year now, he said this year will be 401k, 40,100. Then I had him on again in spring because we had a market dip. He came back very strong. It was going to be whatever it was by opening day of baseball. And Dr. Bob Fralick will be joining us again January 13th at the Executives Club Economic Forecast Luncheon, which I have moderated for, let's just say, over 40 years. And Diane Swonk, the economist, joins us, and John Rogers of Ariel Capital this year. So go to executivesclub.org, plural, executivesclub.org, and get a ticket. We're going to try and do it in person this year if Omicron doesn't mess it up. And it will be at the Fairmont Hotel on Thursday, January 13th.
Got some
so
ground to
we
make
will
up.
Find out.
Got
then
some
I'll get
to
back
make
on
up.
The air.
Got some ground to make up here, Dr. Bob, if we're going to get to 401k. it's not looking good. The answer to the question, none of us knows, but I...
It's not over till it's over, John.
I'll
he
defer
said
to
next
Terry.
Year by the luncheon. Okay.
Oh, really? So it's not December 31st?
It wasn't. We always forecast from luncheon to luncheon.
Okay.
So
okay.
He'll have 2 weeks in January also to get a rally.
I'm glad to hear that. Terry, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for your help today.
Thanks, John.
That's Terry Savage. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago-based Groupon finally has a new CEO. The tech firm has hired Kedar Deshpande, who was previously chief executive at the online footwear company Zappos. He'll replace Rich Williams, who stepped down 20 months ago. Groupon's chairman says Deshpande has a strong track record of driving growth and operational excellence. He'll take over on December 10th and has also been appointed to the Groupon board. One of downtown Chicago's most prominent office landlords has announced plans to rehab some of its properties. New York-based AmTrust Realty will spend $100 million to renovate 7 downtown office buildings, including the mostly vacant former Bank of America building on LaSalle Street. Just a few years ago, AmTrust was ready to pull out of the Chicago market, but this investment suggests it now thinks the downtown office market is poised for a recovery. The properties slated for renovations include the buildings at 33 West Monroe, the Illinois Center property, 1 East Wacker, and 135 South LaSalle. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time, here's Steve Alexander.
Let's talk about fake meat. There's been a ton of media coverage and social media buzz about brands like Beyond Meat, Impossible Burgers, and others.
Which would make you think that it's taking over the meat case. But in reality, even despite after years of growth, I mean, it's still 1.5% of the meat sales.
Did you say 1.5%?
Yeah, 1.5% of the U.S. retail meat market.
That's Chris Dubois, a senior VP of IRI here in Chicago.
We are a leading provider of data and technology to food and retailers. So we see every item that's sold in every supermarket every day. So we know what people buy, when they buy it, and why they buy it. And we run it through a lot of software, and our clients use it to help understand what's selling and what they can do to sell more.
Dubois says IRI's data show retail sales of real meat have been up this year, but sales of fake meat have gone down, what he calls a big deceleration. And he isn't expecting that to change much.
I think over the next 3 to 4 years, you'll see plant-based get to at most 2% of the U.S. retail meat market.
So why haven't fake meats caught on? Look at the labels. Dubois says they don't meet the consumer's definition of clean. Too many oils and complicated ingredients, which didn't matter as much during the get-to-know-you phase.
The way I've said it over the last few years is, you know, it won't matter until it matters. But then it's really going to matter. And I think right now is about that time where it really starts to matter for consumers. In other words, if they're going to be asked to pay a lot more and it's not going to have that clean label that they're looking for, I think a lot are going to struggle on that.
Chris Dubois of IRI. I think I'll borrow that answer. It won't matter till it matters, but then it's really going to matter. It always matters at the Chicago Board of Trade, where corn is up about a nickel, beans are up 16, and wheat 3 cents higher, making a bit of a comeback from yesterday's sell-off. From the farm to your belly, today is National Pie Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Let's talk about things to do in Chicago with Kimberly Bars. She's the president and Kimberly Bear is the president and CEO of the Magnificent Mile Association. The city looks great, Kimberly. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, John.
Talk to me about some of the things I got to have on my to-do list for Chicago in the coming days.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we are getting ready for what we're calling the festive season. And there's no better place to celebrate that festive season than downtown Chicago on the Mag Mile. We've got anything from a winter ski lodge to high tea, Santa's Chicago Home, the Gingerbread Express, you name it, we've got it. And I can give you more details. So, if you'd like.
Well, sure. So some of these things to do are located at some of the venues or places in the city, like the Fairmont Hotel or the Peninsula Hotel. So those are the sort of locations I should target?
Yes. I mean, you can't go wrong going into nearly any hotel on the Mag Mile or in our district because they are all decked out for the holidays. The Peninsula Hotel is sweetly decked out. So is the Swiss Hotel. The Swiss Hotel has created a new holiday tradition with Santa's Chicago Home. If you're looking for the Gingerbread Express, that's at the Trump Hotel Chicago. And the list goes on and on. You mentioned the Fairmont. They've opened a brand new winter ski lodge this year, and that will go through February.
What's that lodge all about? Is that a room you stay in or just a place you hang out?
It's their lounge, and they've transformed it into a winter lounge. So it's got indoor fire pits, fun family programming.
Oh, wow.
I was there for the opening night. You can roast marshmallows. You can, right there in the lodge. It's really sweet.
That's the Fairmont Chicago. Millennium Park's always a favorite for a lot of people. I'm thinking of some of the Instagram spots. Where's a good place to get my Christmas picture taken?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I would say there's no better place than the Water Tower, which is Jane Byrne Park, 800 North Michigan Avenue, right by the Park Hyatt. That is the tree there. The Christmas tree is beautiful, and the trees all around it in the park have been completely wrapped in white lights by the city of Chicago. And it's just gorgeous. I was walking back from a meeting on Michigan Avenue, walked through there, and I had to take a picture. I mean, I've seen it a dozen times already this season alone, John. And I had to take another picture and said to the person I was walking with, Chicago is so beautiful. I can't get enough of it sometimes.
I think the lights sometimes do take your breath away. And if you don't pause and notice them, you'll really miss something extraordinary. And if you haven't come down, I've been singing the praises of this city's unwrapping of Christmas all over again this season, and I'm really glad to see it. We're out of time now, Kimberly, but maybe the best place to go is the MagnificentMileAssociation.com. Is that a good spot?
TheMagnificentMile.com.
TheMagnificentMile.com. Good enough. Mm-hmm. TheMagnificentMile.com. All right, Kimberly, good luck. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much, John.